The Loose Cannons Podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Why, if there's nothing else, there's applause. I've listened backstage to people applaud. It's like... like waves of love coming over the footlights and wrapping you up. Imagine to know every night that different hundreds of people love you. They smile, their eyes shine, you've pleased them. They want you. You belong. Just that alone is worth anything.
Hey everyone, it's another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're continuing in our year of AFI films. We're going to be discussing All About Eve, directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz. But before we do that, we've got a guest host joining us, and you know what that means.
It's time to play some music.
Noted Twitterer, dad, wrestling fan, gamer with a capital G, joining us again. He's escaped the sex cult. It's Bucky.
Hey. I was able to put down the controller and or mouse and keyboard just long enough to record this. Hey.
Thanks for joining us again, Bucky.
All right.
Happy to be here.
Excited to have you.
I do want to say I'm watching Face Off on mute right now also.
This is the way that All About Eve was meant to be discussed.
Yeah.
If I'm going to stop gaming, I got to watch a movie that's basically a game while I'm doing it.
Do you treat the raising of your child like a game? Like, do you mentally, like, cross off, like, achievements?
I do a bit of gamification. I try to, you know, hit perfect timing and, like, speed runs and things like that. But for the most part, I try to keep it pretty relaxed and not,
all right,
Pearl, you know.
The bath is going to be in 323. Why?
Yeah. Yeah, she knows. She gets it. This is, it's all about a routine, right? Being a dad and raising a kid and teaching your child how to execute the perfect 360 no-scope headshot.
Yes. Gotta get that potty training speed run down.
Yeah, still working on that.
Speaking of things done well or done poorly, we like to begin our podcast with a segment we call Heralds and Denouncements. Patrick, do you have anything you would like to talk about?
Yeah, I'm going to herald a movie called Giant from 1956, directed by George Stevens. This was a movie that I watched because it was on the original AFI 100 Years, 100 Movies list, released in 1997 or 8, I think. But it was removed for the 2007 version, so it's not going to be one that we discuss for the AFI podcast this year, but I wanted to mention it because I think it's a really great movie. It actually does that sort of like epic movie making that a lot of Hollywood films seem to, or not a lot of Hollywood films, but a lot of very, very like well-regarded Hollywood films seem to engage in. Specifically stuff like Gone with the Wind or, I'm trying to think of another, like Lawrence of Arabia, or that kind of, like, big epic scope movie that wins movies Oscars a lot. But I think it does it in an interesting and cool way, because it's essentially a movie about how, you know, the United States was founded on this sort of racist imperialist lie, and Americans have to acknowledge that, and the whole film is basically about Rock Hudson coming to terms with that idea and realizing that he can't go through his entire life being racist towards Mexican people, because there are a lot of Mexican people who live and work with him on his ranch, and he's been really horrible to them, and Liz Taylor is like, hey, we should help these people. We shouldn't be an asshole to them. And she finally, like, I kind of also like it because it doesn't just, like, one thing doesn't happen and makes him not racist. It takes, like, decades for him to finally be, like, broken down into realizing that he's been a jerk. And I was like, that's pretty good, actually. Like, that's a good epic story character arc if I ever heard one. It's not like he had to overcome some great obstacle. It was just himself that he had to overcome.
Decades of calling him Drumpf is how they did it.
Yeah.
Let's try the Drumpf thing again.
Let's try to make fun of his hair or whatever. That'll
keep
show
chipping
him
away.
That'll show him. No, but I also really like the performances in this. I think Liz Taylor's awesome. I understand her status as a sort of Hollywood legend now, watching her work. I really like James Dean in this movie also. He does sort of that weird thing that Marlon Brando was doing in On the Waterfront that didn't work there, but he's doing it, I would say, much better and in much more of an understandable context, because he's supposed to be this kind of weird, creepy guy that, you know, like, hangs around and helps them on their ranch and that Rock Hudson kind of hates. And I think it kind of works how he, like, treats him like a space alien, and James Dean kind of reciprocates like he is a space alien for some reason. And I'm like, wow, this is a really fascinating character. He's really sad and creepy, but also fascinating. But yeah, I think the movie actually engages in really good visual storytelling too, which is something that I don't think a movie like Gone with the Wind engages in at all. I think a movie like that actually, like, tries to, like, nail everything over the head too much, and I think that Giant does a good job of conveying information without anyone having to say anything or anything having to be, like, too explicitly set up. It does a good job of giving you a visual and just being like, here's all the information you need to know about the way the story progressed from there. So I really liked it. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did, but it ended up being real fun.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Bucky, do you have any?
How long? Mm-hmm. How long is Giant?
It's I think like 3 hours long.
Okay.
It's a pretty long one. I had to do it in two sittings, but I'd say it was worth it.
Okay. I am always intimidated by that movie, specifically. All I know about it is, like, it's a big house. It's really pretty.
Yeah, there is a big, cool house in it. Reminds me a lot of the house that's in Days of Heaven, actually.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as you said now, big there's house, a good that's what I went to.
95 minutes, tight stuff there, moves like a freight train, love Days of Heaven. I actually do really like that movie. All right, I will herald. I was going to denounce Wonder Woman loudly, but I'd like to be nice, and I like to keep a. I like it when you guys all are positive, so I'm going to herald Ratcatcher, and also a little bit the Florida Project, because I watched them within like a 2 day span.
It's a good double feature.
Oh, yeah.
About poverty and sadness in children.
Yeah, yeah. So I watched The Florida Project, like, I finished it, like, 12:45 at night. And then I, like, tried to go to bed, and that was difficult. But Ratcatcher I watched in the middle of a very nice Sunday. I don't know. My kid was, like, sick all weekend, this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I grew up, like, you know, like, comfortably middle class, and can't relate any of my own experiences to that, that kind of living condition, but I don't know, I feel like it sort of nails everything. I'm not big for realism in movies, I don't really care, but I was really struck by how, you know, not sensationalized all of it was, while also being, like, very beautifully shot. I went searching for subtitles for it Like I went to like the, you know, subscene.org or whatever, like whatever those sites are, and tried to find an SRT file to sync it up, and I couldn't find one. Luckily, I was able to sort of understand the rhythms of their incredibly dense Scottish accents after about 20 minutes. I don't know, that movie starts out, you know, I'm guessing you guys, have you seen...
I've seen Ratcatcher.
Ratcatcher.
I have not.
It starts out with, you know, incredibly, like, heavy emotional moment that it feels, like, cold and disconnected. And I guess if you don't, like, if the characters don't work for you, then it may feel cold and disconnected throughout, but it really does a great job of building its sense of place and time. It's 70s Glasgow poverty. There's like a garbage worker strike, so there's just piles of fucking garbage everywhere, and it's incredibly the sense of place is just really powerful, and you know, it's a depressing movie. It's also kind of hopeful, and I don't think I've seen, and The Florida Project obviously has been talked about on the show at length and talked about everywhere else recently. I think they both do a really good job at that sense of place, and something about Ratcatcher, it's such a foreign thing to me, and I really love the performances by actors who were not actors, I'm assuming. I mean, obviously the guy with the scar on his face from Sons of Anarchy, the worst show of all time, plays the kid's dad. But like the teenage girl who I think is Lynn Ramsey's daughter.
If I had to guess, the children are probably non-professionals, but the adults are probably professionals. I'm pretty sure I've seen the mom and other stuff as well.
Yeah, she looked very familiar, and then I looked her up and I didn't recognize anything, but I'd have clicked on the wrong actor or something. But no, I was kind of blown away by that movie. I haven't seen any of her other movies. I'm looking forward to the, you know, Joaquin Phoenix Taxi Driver movie.
Yeah. So we did a podcast. We did a mini episode about that, me and Basil.
Yeah. I saw that and I have not listened to it. I'm going to listen to that when I finally get around to watching it.
We also did a podcast about You Need to Talk About Kevin, and we canonized Morven Collar. So this is a Lynn Ramsey safe space.
Yeah.
Put a nice bow on it. She's only done 4 movies, which is weird, but I guess if you do movies like this, it really takes it out of you. So she probably needs to just, you know, sit in a bathtub for a while or go into like a deprivation tank for like 6 months afterwards, and then figure out what her next depressing tale will be.
Maybe she'll become Malik and as she gets older and start just pumping out these things.
Yeah, she'll do Knight of Cups 2, the sequel we've all been waiting for. Yeah,
song to
so there
song
you go.
To song.
Yeah, Ratcatcher is very good. I like it very much.
I agree. So it's going to come out after this one, I believe. But I was on a podcast, like 2 days ago. So I haven't had time to watch anything between now and then. I could re-herald Spider-Man 2 for, like, the 12th time on this podcast. But.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that. I still like that movie quite a bit.
Yeah, Sam Raimi's lighting in that movie is real good.
All right, so this is Patrick's pick. So tell us a rough overview of the plot.
The movie is about, essentially, an actress. Her name is Eve Harrington. She's a fan of another actress named Margot Channing, who's sort of the one who's on top. She's the actress who's sort of on top of the theater world. And Eve looks up to her and sort of goes to every performance and gets invited backstage one night by one of Margot's other friends. And they develop a relationship, and Eve sort of becomes her, I guess you'd call her assistant if she was working now. She's just like the person who does everything for her and schedules all her appointments and stuff. But Eve's not you know, that's not really her goal. Her actual goal is to sort of work herself in to be her understudy first, and then sort of steal a big, juicy theater role from her and become an actress in her own right. And basically, Margot Channing decides that she doesn't want to act anymore. She just wants to be married to this man that she's in love with, and she wants to leave the theater business. But Eve keeps trying to work her magic on other things, get more choice roles, but eventually she gets discovered by this reporter that she's been sort of like lying about her whole backstory the whole time, and that she's kind of a con artist. And you know, even though that happens, he sort of doesn't want to ruin her. He just wants to have her in his pocket in a way. And so she, you know, ends up going on to acclaim and is basically winning an award. The bookend of the movie is that she's winning this big award for acting on the stage. And yeah, the whole thing sort of comes full circle at the end when there's another actress who sort of sneaks into Eve's room and is the same sort of like obsessive fan of her work who, you know, basically wants to take her place. And so it's this kind of cyclical thing where one star falls off and another star who's obsessed with them comes to take their place and, you know, take up that mantle of the actress of the moment or whatever.
Okay, Becky, what did you think?
I liked it. I don't know, every time I watch like an old classic, I feel like it's really hard to disconnect myself from the reputation. I mean, obviously, we all go through this, I'm sure. The reputation that it has. I realized, like, when I first put this on, I don't think I've ever seen Bette Davis in anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I was like, oh, I know her. I know her face.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen her in anything. And I'm not, like, you know, averse to watching, like, movies from this era. I don't do it, like, super often anymore, but I thought it was very good. I'm surprised always when something becomes just massively recognized as an all-time classic. I mean, just, like, to start, like, I feel like there's, like, it's very simplistic, like, direction and, like, photography, which is fine because it's a movie that's, like, almost entirely on its script. It's on its dialogue, and that's everything that there is here for the most part. And I think this era specifically, they were very, you know, trading barbs. Like, that's what it was all about. You could build an entire story out of, like, one guy walks into a room and he's like, here's some really good insults, let's build a story from here out. And not that I think that's what happened here, but I don't know, I feel like, and this is going to sound really shitty, but at times, even though I thought it was a great script and had tons of great dialogue, it did feel a bit like a really classy, like, Gilmore Girls episode. Like, I know it's like this, like the meanest thing I can possibly say, but it's so snappy, and they are all so quick, and again, I don't care about realism, but there were times where I was like, damn, she must have been, like, hanging on to that line. She must have, like, thought of that, like, weeks ago and finally figured out a spot to put it in. No, I liked it a lot. I thought Anne Baxter was super good in her... Is Anne Baxter, right? That's her name?
Yes, the woman that plays Eve.
She is... Like, I didn't know that much about this movie going in. I knew it was about a woman obsessed with an actress. And, you know, sort of has some... I thought it was like a stalker movie. I don't know what
There's
I thought
no
it was.
It's not so obvious.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what's the movie with... she cuts her hair. It's a really bad, like, early 90s thriller.
Single White
with,
Female?
Yeah, that's it. What's the from Jackie Brown? I'm bad with actors' names from that era. Bridget Fonda, yeah. I thought it was going to be like that. I thought it was going to end with, like, crazy murder. But it didn't, thankfully. It's... got some weird things where, like, it escalates from... Like I said, I think Ann Baxter's great in this, because at first I felt very secure with her. Like, I thought it was... I thought, if this is a con man, which I didn't know at the time, if this is, like, a grifter, then she's, like, really fucking pulling it off, you know? She's, like, nailing the tone of, you know, when to butt in at the right time and when to just kind of, you know, hang back. And I thought it was a pretty, for a movie that's really big at almost all times, I mean, there's subtlety here and there, but it's a pretty big, their performances are big. I felt like she showed a lot of nuance. And I felt like even then, like the turn from, oh, Eve's harmless, she just wants to help, to Eve's a psychopath and you need to distance yourself from her. Like, it like happened all of the sudden. But yeah, I really dug the what was there. I just felt like parts of it, like the pacing felt weird. I also felt like it was maybe 20 minutes too long, which is a weird complaint to have about a classic film. But Ruben, you said earlier that you thought it was 2 hours and 2 minutes, and then you were like, oh, it's longer than that. And I
Googled,
I thought,
the runtime, and Google betrayed me, like it has multiple times about runtime, although usually that's recent films, which makes sense.
Yeah,
but to me, like an older film, you feel like it would have been corrected by now.
Yeah, I could see, you know, Google's great. Google's like a really good website, but I don't trust their information as much as I trust all.about.eve.1950.blu-ray.720p.h264.
Yiffy?
I feel like that's a...
Yiffy?
It's not a Yiffy. Yeah. It's not...
Mine's Yiffy.
Yeah. It, you know what? This might be a Yiffy that just had the file name trimmed off a little bit. But no, I thought, man, this would make a really good 122-minute movie. Like, it'd be, like, a really, like, solid four and a half.
Well.
122, but at a 138, I don't know.
This is a good point to transition to my feelings, which is I'm going to confess something that I've maybe hinted at but never been explicit in 4 years of this podcast, which is that I am extremely dumb. I'm a big, dumb, stupid person. And, this movie reminded me of that because everybody is talking all the time, and I was like, I don't know, if I wanted to read a book, I'd read a book. I wouldn't watch a movie. So there are a lot of...
they do go quick.
There are a lot of words, and a lot of times I just felt like I was watching words. So I thought it was fine, but that it's probably convincing arguments to be made for how good it really is, but that it's not my thing. Watching people talk a lot. A few exceptions, including a movie that obviously was influenced by this one, Clouds of Sils Maria, which is also...
I thought you were going to say the pilot of Gilmore Girls.
That also is probably true and would have been good. But Clouds of Sils Maria is also about an aging actress dealing with... the industry leaving her behind.
Yep, and younger versions of herself.
Yeah, I need to watch that. And Personal Shopper, the podcast's two favorite movies.
Yeah. Patrick.
Yeah, I'll go one step down and say that I didn't like this movie.
Ooh.
I actually felt like it was a play instead of motion picture. I kind of have a confession to make. I hate how self-serious the theater is about itself, and this movie is a very self-serious theater movie.
I thought the beginning was pretty funny.
I mean,
yeah, I feel like it does take a few steps to show how...
Well, it engages in some barbs, but I feel like overall it is still taking the theater very seriously, and that kind of feels like the reason to me that it's canonized so often by Hollywood, because they're like, oh yeah, the theater's this pure space where like pure acting can be on display or whatever. Because I mean, like, that gets bandied about a lot in especially like Oscar movies. I mean, even the movie that I guess you could say is the most direct predecessor to this, All About My Mother, the Almodovar film.
Not predecessor.
Well,
post-decessor.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean the one that's most influenced by this movie directly. Yeah.
For sure.
Like, yeah, not predecessor.
Successor.
Successor. Yeah. There you go. There you go. I got my prefixes mixed up there. But yeah, that movie also has the same sort of like self-seriousness about like acting in the theater, and I'm just like, it's so boring. Like, I don't care about it. I don't care about, you know, the you know, whatever artistry you believe that you have. Like, I'm all for artistry, but I'm not for like self-serious navel gazing in the least. And I also think that there are some parts of this that are pretty sexist and like,
yeah,
really dogmatically, sure, like binary, like gender binary, you know, I don't know, like soapbox moments where I'm like, I don't know if I buy Joseph L. Mankiewicz's thoughts on what a real woman is. Mm. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the film does a pretty good job in terms of understanding what it's like to be an older woman whose entire worth has been told to her by society is in her looks and her youth, and struggling with the idea that she doesn't have those things anymore. And I think that it can be kind of sensitive about that. But in general, even though I agree with Bucky that I quite like the performance of the actress who plays Eve, that the way that it treats her is like very stereotypical conniving bitch territory by the end of the movie, and that like it doesn't seem to have any of the like realization that like the situation is men have control of all the jobs. They're like, all right, there are 10 jobs for women, and that's it. Women can have 10 jobs, and then why are they so awful to each other to get these 10 jobs? Why do women treat each other so badly to get these 10 jobs? And it's like, well, there's 10 of them. Yeah. That might be why.
and the men are all jerks to them about it.
And this movie doesn't seem to really have any awareness of that, like, even being a factor, unlike another film that we could say was influenced by this film and has also been heralded on this podcast, Showgirls.
Yeah.
There it is.
Which, Showgirls, Showgirls pretty thoroughly eviscerates that.
Yeah, it has the Eve Harrington character as very clearly as its lead, and never is like, she's a good person, but always is like, you should have sympathy for her anyway.
Yeah. And it, that movie actually like holds the men's feet to the fire and like,
yeah,
makes
sure
them out
does.
To be horrendous people. Whereas this movie really balks at that. It's just kind of like, oh, well, you know, the men are men. And they'll deliver a lot of speeches about what's great about the theater and stuff like that, but
Yeah, I felt like for like a movie that felt like it was kind of like driven, you know, obviously the lead roles are women and they're very like strong in their own right, even though they're very catty. Like, it's boy, it's there's a lot of problems there. But it was interesting that like, and I felt very disappointed by the end that Eve, like, through all of her grifting and, you know, conniving her way to the top, she still succumbed to Addison, George Sanders, is that right?
Yep.
His, like, superior blackmail and grifting. Like, I could see, like, why, I guess, like, Mankiewicz, is that right? Mankiewicz?
I have no idea.
like, felt necessary to, like, knock her down a bit to make it, I guess, seem like his, you know, glorious Gilmore Girls script didn't celebrate Eve's motives too much and her like resulting success from her grift. But man, this would have been so much better if she just finished on top and had to like not, you know, cede her success to this dude with a really jerk-off accent. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's also something very suspect about a filmmaker making a movie about how actors and critics are the villains of the filmmaking world, and that the director is, like, the most genuine, nice, like, person in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Other than one scene where he's a little too aggressive with Bette Davis, the whole movie he's just, like, being, like, oh, I love you so much. Like, I don't know why you're so paranoid. You have no reason to feel that way. You know, and we get, of course, like, a scene to make sure that we know that he's not just lying to her, where Eve comes on to him and he's like, thank you for the offer, but no, I'm in love with Margot. And, like, yeah, there's something a little bit self-serving about the portrait of directors versus critics versus actors in this movie.
Yeah, he's the only one who can resist her.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I do like that scene. I think he's really... I don't know that actor's name, but
I like
guy
the
who plays
the
Bill.
Actor, yeah. I think the performance is
good. He kind of nailed that, even though it was kind of an empty, one-dimensional... Well, I don't know if you want to call it one-dimensional role. Two-dimensional. How many dimensions are we supposed to... What's a good...
They're like six.
Amount of dimensions.
12 dimensions is, is what the type
Banzai
of chess we're
eight.
Playing.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what Eve's playing.
Yeah.
No, actually, that's what Addison's playing, because Eve's just playing three-dimensional chess, and Addison's up there in 12th dimension. No, I like that scene, because Eve, like, that's the first chance, when I say chance, the first genuine emotion we ever see out of her is after, like, he shoots her down, and she, like, you know, tears her wig off and, like, tries to rip it in half. It's, like, her first sincere action in the entire movie that we see. But, like, and this is what I wrote before, this is well before the reveal that Addison is playing her the entire time. I say, Eve trying to rip her, trying to rip her wig. Luckily for her, Addison sure is a real cornball fucking pervert, and she capitalizes on that immediately. And then... I guess later on, like, I was never clear on the screenwriter, Karen Channing. Is that... No, not Channing. Karen, I forgot all the names. Yeah. It's all a bunch of, you know, Anglo-Saxon bullshit. every name in this fucking movie. except for Eve's real name, which is something like super Polish or something. I forget.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Interesting.
That was actually an element that I thought was actually poking fun at the right elements, where it was like, oh, she had to change her name to this very, like, bland, you know, mid-Atlantic, you know, like,
and it's
Anglo
a,
name.
It might be a reference to the Lady Eve, because the name of her two characters are Jean Harrington and the Lady Eve.
There you go.
No, I was never clear on whether, because she tells Addison right before he, like, explained, no, I've got you, I've got the reins here, you don't control anything here. She's got the playwright, he's going to come over and they're going to get married. Mm-hmm. I was never, like, sure about, because we never see him from that point. Or see their confrontation or their affair, if that even existed.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure, and I thought that was a little confusing.
I didn't love that.
I don't know, and also he seemed like not a great guy, but also loyal to his wife, which is a weird thing to say about anything. But he seemed... It didn't seem to fit. And then I guess it probably makes more sense if that was all part of Addison's big, you know, big con on her.
I agree. Another part that was weird about that scene is obviously Addison is kind of a villain in this movie, so I don't know how seriously we're supposed to take the things that he says, but he's, like, intimates that he's very upset that she said that her fake husband that she invented died in the war, and he's, like, desecrating the lives of the real heroes died.
Yeah, stolen valor.
And I was like, you're kidding me, right?
Yeah, I had a little giggle at that.
Yeah, I think what's interesting to me about George Sanders, because we saw him in the last AFI movie. I think it was the last one that I...
Rebecca, it's not an AFI movie.
Is it not?
Nope. It's British. Ah.
That was just a movie someone wanted to actually watch.
I guess that was the Hitchcock.
Everyone
list,
but me on
it?
The podcast wants to do this AFI thing. I was the lone dissenting voice. But we've gotten some good podcasts out of it anyway.
Yeah, I just assume when we did a Hitchcock movie, it was on the AFI list. But that's another movie with George Sanders where he is also playing a similar character. Mm-hmm. But
a vaguely effeminate creep.
Right. Well, what I think is interesting about him in that movie is that his character is actually right. Like, he knows the plot. He's like, oh, yes, you murdered your wife, and I'm going to prove it. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. This guy's a jerk and a creep, but he's also right. Like, that guy did murder his wife. And in this movie, he's just a jerk and a creep. And I'm like, I don't know that I find it, you know, as interesting. Like, his whole thing about that he's right about is like, you faked things. And I'm like, well, yeah, but that doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, she's still like, a good actress.
I know, yeah. That part's not fake, you know? Well, he's only taking advantage of it for his own ends, whereas in that case, like, he's right. This guy's a murderer. He needs to go to prison. Even if he is doing it for his own ends, like, yeah, that character's a bad guy. But it's just funny to see him in two different roles so close together that actually could have been, you know, the same character, but in one he's right about sending a murderer to prison, but then the story lets him off that hook in a very like weird way, and I was like, ooh, Hitchcock really knew how to make creepy things creepier.
I scare quotes like the implication that what makes a good actor is being a good liar.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, doesn't her like the older woman, Birdie? Is that right? Mm-hmm.
Thelma Ritter.
Doesn't she? Yeah. She like immediately like calls Eve's story a performance, or like maybe not in so many words, but yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? And I guess that sort of it wears that on its sleeve. That's not some subtle thing. That she's a good actress from the start, you know? She's like, nailing it. That's the whole point of, I guess, the movie, is that a good actor can find their way to success on and off the stage. And I do think it's interesting that we never once see a single shot of anyone acting on stage. even the...
But plenty of them acting off stage, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, even the like the audition that we, you know, we immediately hear George Sanders tell Margot that Eve just killed it, knocked her out of the park. That's another sports reference. I'm trying to rack them up here.
Which is also a sports reference in and of itself.
Yeah, rack them up. Yeah.
She hit the big shot really, from downtown.
Yeah. Big, yeah.
The three at the bucket.
I think I'm out of them. I think that's all I've got if you want to carry on, though.
To be honest, though, whenever someone like really does like a good point on the podcast, I think we should go like, Bucky's on fire!
Yeah.
He's heating up.
There you go. Now there's something I can like get the reference to. NBA Jam, a classic video game. Before I like move on, I know we talked about Bill earlier, and I don't think we're gonna get to him again. I wanted to say, oh God, I've got so many notes here that just look like the scribblings of an insane person. All right. First of all, there's the scene where they're on the stage, and they've just done the audition, Yeah, the understudy read, I guess.
Yeah.
With
Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. That's right. That's what it was. And I like Marilyn Monroe in this.
Yeah, she's always good.
She's in three scenes. She's hilarious. There's a scene where Bill yells no and then steps out from behind like a really big heart that I like almost like spit out my drink. It was so ridiculous. I really liked him in this movie. I like the scene where he's like, he goes to kiss Margot at the airport and Eve totally, you know,
like butts in.
Yeah, and then she like immediately moves into Margot's house 5 minutes later. Like, how do you not recognize that this is what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And then I also liked the scheduled phone call on his birthday
at midnight.
which I guess would be what 3 a.m. in New York, which is interesting. I didn't think about that, but I thought it was like. He like seemed like he was politely fishing for phone sex.
Oh yeah,
and he had the phone sitting like right on his crotch, which
she says like that's something that children do.
yeah, and then I don't know. Like moving from there, there's a scene at the party which I think is maybe like a major set piece that is very successful. The big party when Margot's drunk and she's going up the stairs and like. I guess Bill says, do you want me to put you to bed? And then she says something like, why doesn't Eve just do it? And then Eve says, if you'd like. So there's some like light, I don't know, maybe I'm reading way too far into it, but there's some light sexual tension there.
I don't think you're reading Eve's too far willing, into it.
Yeah.
And I think it exists Eve's... at every level. Like, it's supposed to go straight down the line from Thelma Ritter to Bette Davis to Eve
right.
to the new girl. That each one of them has become this person for the other one a little bit because they're infatuated with them. Like, where they want to fuck just, like, a little bit.
Yeah. Even if it's just fucking them to get ahead, it's there.
So and I mean the other way. As well.
Yeah, okay.
That, like, the reason why Thelma Ritter sticks around is because she's a little bit in love with Bette Davis, and the reason why Davis lets
Eve
into
her
life
have...
is a little bit because she is infatuated with her.
Yeah, I mean, she does have those Bette Davis eyes. all the boys think she's a spy.
Jesus Christ.
I was glad we finally got to do a Bette Davis movie too, because I had actually made a list of just Bette Davis movies that we were supposed to do, and somehow the scheduling got mismanaged a little bit, and that movie kind of got left in the dust, unfortunately. So I was glad because I had gotten us to do a Joan Crawford movie before, and I was like, no, now we got to do a Bette Davis movie too.
Oh, were they friends? Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, famously, they were.
It's a little joke.
I mean, it's yeah. Oh, okay.
Now see, I haven't seen it. I've never seen a Bette Davis movie.
I see. That was humor.
Just a little troll from the ultimate troll himself.
Yeah, thank you for that incredible title you've given me. Well, I haven't seen any Bette Davis, or I've seen Joan Crawford in something. Yeah. Grand Hotel or something?
Yes.
Have you seen Johnny Guitar?
Johnny Guitar. That was our second podcast ever?
Wow.
I think.
I don't even know what that is.
That's
Johnny Guitar rules.
Yeah, it's a Western.
It sounds really good from the title, knowing nothing else about it.
What if I told you it's directed by Nicholas Ray?
Hell yeah.
Okay. Okay, I've seen one of his movies. You said Sterling Hayden?
Sterling Hayden plays the titular Johnny Guitar.
All right, I'll watch anything Sterling Hayden is in. God, Johnny Guitar. All right, I'll give it a look.
Oh, I was going to say the barbs in this movie, some of the barbs in this movie are actually pretty good. Like, I did laugh.
Oh, yeah.
I did laugh really hard when Bette Davis said that all playwrights should be dead for 300 years. That's like, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets most of the good ones. I also like when, referring back to that party scene, she comes in and there's actually a really gorgeous shot of her like walking in and the camera like going up over the railing and down to Bill and Eve. And he's like got his like leg up on like the ottoman, like in kind of like a semi-sexual pose, like her head is like right between his legs, and he's like, so what was that story or something like that, and then Eve doesn't say anything, and Margo says something like, oh, is this story not for adults?
Yeah, that leads into the milkshake line.
Yeah, there's a lot of references says, about her being a child in that party.
Yeah, I do feel like that party sequence is, I mean, just from like a visual standpoint.
Is it not a story for grown-ups? That's what the line is.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to be able to say something like that to someone who is like, you know, on their knees looking up from the crotch of my man. Okay. I'd love to have a chance to say some shit like that.
In the crotch of your man while you play 2K.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck.
Oh my god, Betchin. Shut it down. Podcast is over. Not just this one, I mean in its entirety.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Really had a swish on that one.
Steph Curry.
Oh. This time we get extremely online.
Yeah, there you go. Tag Adam Ochoa in this. First Adam Ochoa name drop on the pod. Yeah. There you go. No, so I was gonna say before 2K. Before 2K happened, that's like, so that scene I think is really like visually interesting, like everything like in the kitchen when she's, you know, and then like the staircase and all that. I feel like I was like a little let down by the simplistic direction, but I guess it just like shines a light better on the script and the dialogue. But then like the last scene, which I know we'll talk about, but man, the last scene where the younger actress, the even younger actress, comes in and is holding Eve's dress, and then it's the shot of, you know, the circle of mirrors that's like, it's like John Wick 2 finale. I found like the direction for this movie to be mostly like straightforward as far as visually, like until that last shot, which is super distracting. And, yeah, I guess. but also, I think I see a dude's face peering over, like a guy, like a production worker. I'm pretty sure if you look at that last shot, there's a guy in the shot, and it's, I don't want to confirm or deny, but I'm pretty sure it's Bob from Twin Peaks.
That makes a lot of sense. There we go.
I don't know.
There's the origin of that.
Yeah. You thought it was a nuclear bomb. Spoilers for Twin Peaks, The Return. But no, it was just a guy who was on the production crew for All About Eve, which I bet David Lynch would totally be down with that being the lore behind that character. Because I bet he loves this movie. Yeah. And laughs at it. Well,
yeah, I mean, yeah, I
meditating.
Mean, you could draw a line from this to Mulholland Drive, also.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, and I guess talking even a little bit more about that party scene, and also drawing back on something that Patrick said, is one of the benefits I think of being a kind of play-like movie is that this movie does have pretty good blocking, like. How the actors move in space is something that's almost always interesting in that film. We mentioned that one blowjob setup, but there's lots of other setups in this, in the way that characters look in their placement in the screen that is very evocative. There was another one that I really liked, but I'm blanking on what it is. Right now, when Bill and Margo are arguing after the line reading, I guess, and he's like laying on the bed, the set bed, and he's just like, yes, dear, no, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear, no, dear, yes. I don't know.
I thought you were gonna bring up the part where he's behind the harp again. Which I don't know if that wasn't notable to you. Like, watch that scene again because it's really good, really stupid, really hilarious. No, yeah, that scene is definitely. I don't know. I will say this too. That scene is effective with its angles and with its blocking. That's a really good point. I did wonder like where Eve got off to after she like ran away. And there's a shot, like the shot before it fades to black from that scene, is sort of from like the Statler and Waldorf seats. And I expected her to be like in the shadows wearing like a cloak or something. Like,
I mean, yeah, that seems in line with the amount that she eavesdrops on people. She eavesdrops.
In this movie. All right, now the podcast is over.
There we go. Canceled. Loose Cannons has finally hit its apex. It's all downhill from here, people.
Yeah, I'm glad I could be a part of this moment. my goodness.
Yeah.
Who's the guy that plays Max Fabian? Because he's ridiculous.
Who is that actor? I was actually curious about that.
I had it open to the page. We'll see if I still have it open to the page. I do. Nope, I don't. I have it open to The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Because that was the other Joseph L. Mankiewicz film that I saw that also gave 2.5 stars to.
I like that movie.
Gregory Ratoff.
All right. Rats off to you.
Yeah.
Right?
There you go.
Remember?
Rats off to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was really bad in this movie. I don't know. He's really good, too.
We'll do,
but it didn't fit.
An even bigger stretch of influence and be like, Brad Bird was watching this movie and was like, I don't like how they treat critics. I'm going to make a movie that's nice about critics. But what animal am I going to make it about? Rat on. Ratatouille. That shall be the movie about critics.
What French dish is also the name of an animal?
I'm enjoying our All About Eve expanded universe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a good thing.
Can we?
Well, it's a good.
While we're on Brad Bird, can we somehow fit this into that Mission Impossible movie that he directed?
Well, I was gonna say it's a good thing that Brad Bird picked a vegetarian dish instead of one that actually used the animal that he wanted to include in the movie, because that would have added a weird element to that movie. Where they were like, "Oh, I guess we kind of need to cook you for this dish, huh?"
I don't believe there are any dishes that have rat in them.
Well, it's true, but if he had picked a different animal, you know, if he had picked, like, I don't know, like, leg of lamb or something, and then it had a lamb in it. It's like Disney Pixar's Leg of Lamb.
Yeah.
And it's just a lamb pulling a guy's hair and making him do stuff.
I've never watched it, but Basil tells me there's a really funny, disturbing joke in BoJack Horseman about a chicken who sells chickens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a dark show. I don't remember that specifically, but that sounds like it's in line with it.
I don't really have any other super important notes, just little lines that I liked, like when Marilyn Monroe said they all look like unhappy rabbits.
Yeah, I was going to say I liked Marilyn Monroe's performance, but I don't like her character at all. Her character is just straight up like, some actresses are stupid. And I was like, that's not a good comment on anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's another case of like, the writing is bad, but the performer takes it to a place that they never intended, because she plays that role a lot, and yet somehow she always comes off as stronger and smarter than the people who seem like they're pushing her around.
Yep.
Which is cool.
Mm.
Yeah, they're trying a little too hard to belittle her. And you're like, you seem defensive. Probably because you're around someone who is a really good actor.
Yeah. Well, they don't like what their dicks are doing, and they're like, we're going to say she's stupid.
Yeah.
Because I'm uncomfortable with this loss of power.
Very uncomfortable with how attracted I am to you.
Someone says, I hate men during this movie. And that's an hard agree.
Oh yeah, that was that's Margot at one point. I think she's complaining about Bill when she's in the kitchen, I think.
The most upstanding man in the entire movie, also.
There's one part where you can hear a piano in another room, and it's playing Stormy Weather, which I thought was cool. Reminds me of, it makes me, like, I guess it's cool that in the modern times that they try to do original music for all movies, but, like, this was sort of, like, they would just, instead of having, like, a temp track and then making something that kind of sounds like it, but isn't it for new movies, they admitted in the past that, like, movies had this, like, cinematic connection. And so, like, they're like, oh, I love Stormy Weather. I'm going to include Stormy Weather and All About Eve. Mm. And, like, people were like, I love Love Me Tonight, so I'm going to put Isn't It Romantic in literally every movie that has music in it from the 30s and 40s. So everyone loves Love Me Tonight, or at least they did back in the day. And also it wasn't copyrighted, so that helped as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what were the licensing fees for things like this back then?
I'm guessing, again, like with Stormy Weather, because it was like an all-black musical, that they probably didn't have, like, access to, like, the best lawyers to make sure that was, like, under lock and key.
Might have also been the same studio, though. The studio may just have owned the rights to the song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. There were only two studios back then. I have a lot of shit written down, and it is just shit, absolute garbage. I wanted to say...
Well, this is the garbage part of the podcast. Let's get diving in.
Right. We're in garbage time.
You guys always... Yeah, there you go. I'm gonna take the knee. I'm gonna throw a Hail Mary. This is my favorite thing that I wrote. The concept of a younger grifter continuing the cycle until it's just like an 8-year-old actress conning her way into an award-winning role. The even younger actress at the end, and then, like, there's a thing, and this movie goes on for an extra 2 hours and 18 minutes until it's just the girl from the Florida Project, like, conning her way past Emma Roberts or whoever, you know? Like,
accepting an Oscar on stage.
Dakota Fanning and Haley Steinfeld.
It's just Anna Paquin up on stage accepting an Oscar. Like, I did this.
Yeah.
It was me.
Yeah, I really like and then the mirror scene. I keep thinking about Bob, so that's what I got. Also, I just noticed this is not related, but the guy who plays the dad in Ratcatcher and is the guy with the scars on his face, I just noticed that he's on Face Off, which is, again, playing on the TV behind my computer screen right now. So there you go.
Yeah, you know.
Another movie about someone showing up and trying to take over someone else's life.
Yeah.
Direct line from this to Face Off.
I definitely would have given this movie at least 3 stars if at one point, when Eve finally admitted her plan, she was like, I want to take her face off.
Yeah, and then a dove flies past. Yeah, hell yeah.
There's just a gunfight at the end of the movie.
That's what I thought was going to happen. I was full on, this is a single white female, and then it wasn't, and then there weren't any gunfights, but you know what does have gunfights? Face Off.
Sure does.
I heard this story, and I don't know if it's apocryphal, but apparently the studio was fighting to have the title of the movie changed, and Nicolas Cage really liked the title, and that is why that scene happens, is that it's actually improv by him trying to make sure that the title stays the same, so he just keeps saying Face Off over and over again.
What a legend. Yeah. The hero that we don't deserve. He's about to jump off that prison.
I hope I get to work with him someday.
There's that awful tweet going around. I can't even remember what the comparison is, because the comparison to Nicolas Cage makes me so mad. When they're like, people say blah, but Nicolas Cage won an Oscar. Things are different now, or something like that. Have you seen that tweet?
What?
It's... And I'm like, no, Nicolas Cage is a good actor.
Yeah, he won an Oscar for playing one of the most horrific portrayals of addiction that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know anything about that movie, but I like him in a ton of stuff. I don't always like him. Sometimes I think he phones it in or misses the mark, but...
He's, Leaving Las Vegas isn't very good. He's really good in it, though.
It seems like it would be a bad movie because it's just about a dude destroying his life with alcohol. But
yeah, it's rough. But he's good in it. And I don't know. I haven't looked at the 95. I think it was 95 list of nominees. But I think it was probably an easy year. He wasn't up against any real massive giant performances, like for instance Tom Hanks in another movie.
Is that, like, brought to you by the people who did, like, Date Movie?
Yeah.
Tom Hanks in another movie?
he plays a mentally handicapped AIDS survivor in the Gulf War, and he's going to steal
the captain
Nicolas
of a woman's
Cage's Oscar.
Baseball team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Walt Disney.
Oh. Nicolas Cage is a better actor than Tom Hanks.
For sure. I don't think there's any debate as far as that's concerned. That's generally critically agreed on, right?
Good podcast.
It seems like a...
Put that in your Letterboxd quotes, Ruben.
I thought you were going to say put that in your Letterboxd pipe and smoke it.
I don't know what that means. It's a reference to something I wouldn't know anything about.
It's a drug-free zone.
Yeah. Sports, games...
My Nothing anti-drug anime.
Yeah.
All right, so thanks for listening, everybody. And, of course, thank you for joining us again, Bucky, to discuss another movie.
I had a lot of fun. It's a fun show. It's,
you know, we have fun here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a couple of bros
to hang out with
hanging
you.
Out. Getting extremely
last
online.
Time I was on last time Patrick wasn't here, so now I've hung out with all of you.
Hooray.
So yeah, next time just Ilya and Basil, and you guys can sit it out. Just have one of them contact me and we'll watch Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Get that Nicolas Cage canon complete.
Have you guys done an episode on Face Off? Well, you have now.
Technically, no, but it was canonized. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ilya canonized it. And I think I defended it, too. Yeah. I think I swooped Basil, in
Basil
and
tried
saved
to
black it from the blackball.
And you blackballed
swooped
blackball.
In, and I was like, no! Yeah. Keep it in there.
Listen, I'm pretty sure the Vatican has canonized at this point, so... Let's be real.
They
here.
Really love the portrayal of Nicolas Cage as a priest.
Yep. I could eat a peach for an indeterminate amount of time.
Big fans. Big fans of the Vatican.
It wouldn't have been too bad if you hadn't blackballed his blackball, though, because his alternate was also an American John Woo movie, the Jean-Claude Van Damme one.
Hell yeah, Hard Target.
Yeah, Hard Target.
Recognize. Lance Henriksen.
Was the alternate, which is also a very
fucking,
good movie.
Who's the diabetes guy?
Wilford Brimley.
Wilford Brimley.
Yeah. Fantastic
the,
turn as
French
a really bad
accent,
Cajun
caricature. With a French accent that comes and goes.
Great movie, man. Great movie.
Okay. Thanks for listening again, everybody. And next week, we should be having a discussion of Edvard Munch, the Peter Watkins film. I guess started off as a TV special, but had a theatrical release to get into award shows. And
a tight 95-minute movie right there.
And as always, please subscribe using your podcast listening application. Give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes, and you can check out all of our content on loosecannons.net, as well as become a patron, if you'd like, on our Patreon, patreon.com/loosecannons. We sure do appreciate it. But that is all for now. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye bye. Look, man, it's Wu's first American movie. He doesn't know how we do it over here, you know?